Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Plays Already in Progress.
Guys, now, Steve, you're the president this year now, president, you know, reigning president of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, and Jeff, you've been a past president. Tell us, what is the raison d'etre of the American Society of Golf Course Architects?
Mr. President,
Your Honor.
You know, Jay, I didn't quite understand your question, but I think one of the big things the message we've got to get out, and Jeff kind of approached this earlier, we've got just about 15,500 golf courses in America right now. And of those 15,500 golf courses, about 12,000 of them are more than 30 years old. And the game has changed dramatically through the years, and it's changed dramatically over the last 15 years just because of the introduction of new turf grasses and water management, water conservation, sustainability, and things like that. So I would say that the majority of our members are extremely busy with addressing. I talked to a couple of our members today. They're extremely busy addressing the existing golf courses that we have out there and basically making golf better for those who enjoy and love the game of golf. I think that's the big message we want to get out.
Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, you know, you cut me and I bleed Ross Tartan red, you know, blue and green. I bleed plaid. So it has just been one of the best experiences of my life. And part of it is you go into a room and you can sit next to a Jack Nicklaus, a Pete Dye, I mean, the older days, you know, Robert Trent Jones. And I just have always felt part of that continuum of architecture history. And you know, all the guys together do good work. And then, you know, we get together on issues that, affect our profession. You know, we try to reach out a little farther beyond our own individual projects and help golf, just like Steve says. So. Like I say, it's just always been an honor that they'd let a guy like me in there.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, to Jeff's point, one of the neat things about our profession is, the camaraderie amongst the people who practice this. There's a lot of really good people who have a lot of passion for the game of golf, and they really do want to make the game better. I would say that for our entire profession.
So tell us, what's the ASGCA doing about sustainability, and what is it doing about trying to keep the cost of building golf courses and therefore green fees down, if anything?
Jeff, you want to handle that?
Well, yeah, I mean, in general, like you go out to the West Coast, I think one of those turf reduction plans are big in California. One of our members, Damien Pascuzzo, I think has six of those going right now. But if whether it's turf reduction, new forward tees, that's one of my kicks. I'm actually in the kick of, shortening golf courses because design them maybe from the front back or at least the middle back because that's, 99% of your players. And then, just making them technically sound where they can last 20 years. I mean, we've gone to a lot of golf courses that are being rebuilt perhaps before their time because, other people cut corners, didn't build them as well as they could have been built. And that's an interesting question. I've always maintained that, the most expensive thing to do is, build it cheap. It's hard to sell in this climate, but I always try to get my clients to build to the highest standard possible, because if it lasts 20 years instead of 10 or 30 instead of 20, it's cheaper in the long run just to do it right. And I think most ASGCA members would say the same thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, Jay, on that note, I think the ASGCA along with the USGA has been very, very supportive. And the ASGCA is kind of working with USGA on just the things that Jeff was talking about, what Damien's doing in California, turf reductions, water management. That's the big trend in our industry today. And if we can do that, I'm not going to say it's going to reduce the cost of greens fees, but it will help the cost of maintenance tremendously.
Now, one of my favorite thoughts is that what we really need to be doing is building slightly shorter golf courses, 6,500-yard golf courses, with smaller but more interesting greens and with more rumpled fairways that are, you know, cost around $45, $50. You know, what are your thoughts on where golf course architecture is going in the future?
Well, you know, on that note, I think there's a couple things. You know, first and foremost, people respond to very dynamic landscape settings. I mean, they just respond. That's what makes them feel good. So that's why you see in the publications all these golf courses that are built along the ocean. That's why they're, you know, with the dramatic edge, whether it be lake or ocean, that's where people respond. So if we're building golf courses inland on ordinary sites, as architects, we have to be creating a very dynamic landscape setting. But from a playability standpoint, I think that Marion is a pretty good example. I think that we need a blend of extremely long golf holes and a blend of extremely short golf holes, because if we just look at 6,500-yard golf courses, to Jeff's point, the next generation coming up, those short golf courses, the younger generation plays the game and plays it so much differently than what we did when I was growing up or when you were growing up. We have to build golf courses that captivate their interest. And if they're just short, when they're hitting short clubs all the time, that bores them tears. So they need something to have a tremendous variety. And I think Marion's a good example where you have a blend of very long holes, a very long golf holes, and a blend of short golf holes.
I remember you and I both agree about Marion, that Marion is not a short golf course. Marion is a long golf course that has several very short holes.
Without a doubt. I mean, you've got a 7,000-yard golf course that's got two par fives and a par three that's 100 yards long. Outside of that, I mean, you know, and then you've got a couple very short holes. I mean, it's got a lot of long golf holes to it. Long,
Jeff, you're
playing very good golf holes, too.
Jeff, your thoughts on that. Where's golf course architecture going in the next 10, 12, 15, 20 years?
A couple things I've been waiting for. Steve mentions the dynamic landscape, you know, and really the esoteric version of things. I think that that's so important because we grew up as the TV generation and we're more visual than people were before. And so I'm kind of wondering what it is when you look at the next generation of kids, and I'm not talking about tour pros or top amateurs, but just, you know, the guys who are going to fill the golf course up. And, you know, they're addicted to their cell phones now and instant information. And I sort of see more technology, maybe not in the architecture, but in the way the game is presented. And, you know, in 500 years, what, there's four or five scoring systems. I think they may be playing a whole different variety of games to attract. And to that point, for example, the course I'm doing in South Texas, you know, it's part of a trailer, you know, RV park and mobile home community and mostly retirees and maybe some oil field workers. And, you know, I basically convinced them that, you know, we don't need to worry about that top 1% of golfers at this particular golf course, and let's design that down, and maybe 67 is the back tees. And my son was a college golfer. He plays at 67. If he's going to come see Dad down in the retirement home, you know, he'll have to play at 67 that day and, you know, just play for the company. But you look at restaurants. I mean, Howard Johnson's or something used to be the biggest chain, broad menu, and now it's all, you know, specialty, Mexican, Italian, Thai, you name it. So I keep thinking the golf courses are going to sort of break out and specialize. You know, if you had a club corp with 20 golf courses in Dallas, why couldn't one be aimed at the families and the juniors and a couple at the top end and more in the middle of a couple different ways? So I see more specialization just because the talent of golfers is spreading out and diverging so far.
You know, I agree with that statement anymore. I mean, you can't be everything to everybody. Everything has to have its own product, its own brand. I think Jeff hit the nail on the head on that.
Well, my thoughts are that what's good for television isn't necessarily good for golf course architecture. for many, many, many years, we got into a monkey-see, monkey-do kind of thing where everybody wanted to host the U.S. Open. Everybody wanted an ultra-green golf course. Everybody wanted Augusta National. You know, and it led to a proliferation of harder is better. I also am heartened, though, that I believe we are in the second golden age of golf course architecture because we are throwing it back to the McDonald's and the McKenzie's and the Rosses, that restorations have gotten better than they have before, and that new designs are of a higher quality and more interesting. Your thoughts on those observations?
Well, I don't think Steve and I would argue with you if you're saying it's pretty good these days.
We'll take that compliment, right, Steve?
No, you know what, and Jay, you bring a pretty good point. I mean, if you look at the McKenzie's and the McDonald's and the Rosses and the Tillinghast, you know, those guys were all very forward-thinking people. And the reason the game of golf has been able to grow and prosper, you know, for the last 115 years is because everybody, you know, innovation is a very integral part of the growth and prosperity of the game and, you know, and the growth of the game of golf. So these guys were very, very innovative thinkers. And I think the architects of today that are doing good work are very innovative thinkers. And they're doing things that, just like Jeff says, we're trying to innovate to address the audience that we're designing for right now.
Okay, so tell us then, students of architecture that are out there listening, what public golf courses can they go and play to learn about golf course architecture best?
Jeff, you go first?
No, rank as privileged, Mr. President.
I thought you were going to say age before beauty that time.
You know, I there's so many good ones out there. I mean, what, you know, you go to your neck of the woods up here, you've got Beth Page. All the courses of Beth Page are pretty heck awesome. You know, those are pretty stimulating golf courses. Yale, I noticed Yale is hosting the Yale Golf Club is hosting the regional championship right now. I think that's a public access golf course as well.
At moments it is, yes, at times.
Yeah.
Although you should know them. It's easier to get on by knowing a member or by being an alumni. But,
yeah, that's true. But they're hosting, I think this week, I think they're hosting the NCAA regional championships right there.
That's a heck of a golf course to try to play, that's for sure. Very intelligent golf course.
A neat golf course, yeah. Sure.
Charles Blair, McDonald, and Seth Rainer at their very best. How about you, Jeff? Your thoughts?
You know, I think you could go to any major metropolitan area in the country and, you know, pick out a half a dozen to a dozen really good. I mean, certainly, you know, notch below a wing foot or something like that, but you know, you kind of touched on that earlier. You know, the guys like me, you know, my first round of golf was on Medina number 3. My neighbor was a member, and then I got relegated to the public courses, and, you know, I knew the difference. And I think a lot of the guys have the same story and have been trying to get public golf to, you know, to catch up to country club golf. By and large, I think it does. I think what you miss on, you know, going, let's say, Cowboys or any, you know, the other dozen top public courses in Dallas is that, you know, the subtlety of the green contours, I think, has largely gone away, you know, in favor of the faster greens and more cup space and practicality and things like that. And, you know, some of the things that Steve was talking about, of course, one, he's one of the best amateur players in a long time, for a long time, and he thinks the game on a whole different level than most people. But if you wanted to learn architecture, you'd have to play with Steve and then go play some of those great, you know, old courses that have been around for 100 years.
Or play with you on some of your courses as well.
Let's go play the Cowboys Club. I think that's a pretty good one right there.
Well, I like that idea. And you know what else we're going to hopefully get a chance to do when we go out there? Okay, we got to catch a hockey game together. I still tell the story about laughing my fanny off at the national anthem at the Dallas Stars game when everybody waits and waits and waits and then shouts, "Stars!" when it comes up during the song. I haven't had that much fun. You know, we are big hockey fans, Jeff and I, Steve. Let's get right on to our hockey discussion. How about you come to a Dallas Stars game with us?
I love to.
Now, I understand you're rooting for your local Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, why not? They're doing great right now. And I've got to tell you, the whole city has got a buzz right now about the Lightning. They really do.
So, Jack, your thoughts on their showdown with the Rangers for the Eastern Conference title?
Well, if you go back to October when you graciously had me on and we talked a little hockey, I believe my predictions were Tampa from the East and Anaheim from the West. And I still think that's going to happen, even though the Rangers and the Hawks are certainly formidable competition. I think we're going to see Tampa go to the finals, and I don't know what's going to happen. I think Game 7 is going to be a triple overtime against Anaheim, and you can't predict those.
No, you can't. I sat through 4 overtimes one night when my Utica Comets were playing against the Chicago Wolves early in the year. The 4 overtime game was against Oklahoma City. That's what it was. We played 3 overtime games against the Wolves before beating them finally in Game 5. And then we went 4 overtimes, okay, 2 full hockey games and 16 seconds before Oklahoma City won. I'm going to take the Lightning over the Rangers in 7 games because they have the crucial Game 7 in Tampa Bay. I'm going to take Anaheim in only 4 or 5 against the Blackhawks, and we'll have to revisit a little later who I think is going to take the Stanley Cup. Steve, any thoughts on your end on that?
No, I like the way you're thinking. I like the way you're talking, though.
Okay, now, Jeff, your Texas Stars were out very quickly in 3 games. In the AHL playoffs, they got steamrolled, out in the first round by Rockford IceHogs, who are now losing to the Grand Rapids Griffins. Have you been following the Stars, and are you looking forward to being in the Pacific Division against 5 California teams next year in the AHL West?
Oh, no, I feel sorry for the Austin fans down there, the Texas Stars fans. You know, the Dallas was in the Pacific Division, and, you know, if you're a loyal fan, that meant, you know, 20, 30 games a year starting at 9:30 and finishing at 1 in the morning or whatever. It's a terrible deal for the Texas Stars. I can't believe they're happy about it.
Yeah, it was definitely a rough thing. A lot of Eastern franchises of the AHL lost out because the teams move west to be closer to their parent club. Happily, that has not happened to the Comets. They've had a magical year this year. Everything from hosting the All-Star game to Jacob Markstrom bringing the second longest shutout streak in regular season to 11-game winning streak to close the season out. And now, you know, they hosted the first playoff game in 22 years, sold it out, everybody dressed in white for what they call a whiteout, appropriate for I-90 blizzards all winter, and then winning that crucial Game 5, the deciding game at the odd, and now taking a 3-2 lead against the Oklahoma City Barons in the second round of the playoffs. The only regret I have is that if they keep winning, they're going to be playing while I'm supposed to be at Wingfoot and while I'm supposed to be at Chambers Bay.
But I hate to tell you, I'm one of those weird Texans who would probably take the hockey over the golf, although Chambers Bay is quite a venue for the U.S. Open. So.
Well, I got to go cover these events. Yeah. It's going to be interesting in the next few weeks. I have no idea what I'm going to do. I've had to adjust my schedule on the fly. It's been wild here because every time you turn around, they just keep winning, you know, and they just keep extending series and they keep responding. You know, they get into a slump, they lose a game, but they come back the next day. You know, they got the lead late, all of a sudden they give up a goal, but then they come back in overtime. 4,000 screaming fans. It has to be the single most surreal chant in all of sports to be on the ice and have 4,000 people at the top of their lungs screaming, "Eureka! Eureka!" It's got to be the most annoying thing in sports next to watching the Patriots come out onto the field if you're an enemy player.
No kidding. I've never heard of anyone deflating a hockey puck, but
they did try that in Syracuse. They didn't deflate the hockey pucks. They just forgot to freeze them when they had a 1-0 lead over the Comets, and the pucks kept bouncing all over for the third period. So you might not be able to deflate a hockey puck, but you sure can inflate it. And it was Syracuse that did it. Okay, there was quite a rivalry between Utica and Syracuse. Syracuse, when they found out Utica was in the league, put up a big billboard that said, "Syracuse, because friends don't let friends root for Utica." And so Utica responded by putting up a billboard saying, "Syracuse fans, sell your tickets now."
Well, I got to ask, Steve, I mean, have you been able to secure playoff strips for the Lightning? Or is that, like you say, that pretty well sold out to the season ticket holders?
I'll tell you what, they're sold out, but I have not been to any games. So I'm not real good for this conversation right here.
Yes,
well, I don't mean to make it
possible,
but go to a live hockey game. You'll never go back.
I tell you, the first hockey game I ever went to was 1983, the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton when Gretzky was playing.
Well, that's
so
a good one.
That's a pretty good one right there, yeah.
Well, I met Gretzky at a golf outing, actually, which was pretty interesting. He was playing, representing the NHL players. But we also had Mark Messier come in the building the other night at the playoff game between Utica and the Oklahoma City Barons, who are the farm team, of course, the Edmonton Oilers. So it was pretty interesting seeing Messier on the one side and Trevor Linden on the other. Anyway, boys, it was great having you on the show. I can't wait to meet up with you down the road. Thank you so much for coming on.
Very good, Jay. Thank you, Jeff. Great being with you there.
Yeah, thanks for all
everybody,
the time.
Everybody, we're going to leave you in the very capable hands of DJ Q. We're going to have the boys on later on in the year, so we'll be able to hear all about the changes that they've made to the courses out in China, in Jeff's case, and down in Dallas and Steve's. Jeff, Steve, any parting words to the fans?
Just have a great golf season. I know it's springtime up in the Northeast, and golf is doing very well right now, so go out and enjoy yourself this season.
Yeah, I just said take your son, your grandson, daughter, your granddaughter. Let's get the next generation out there. Tell them that golf's better than video games.
Love it. Yes, get them outside. Everybody, we will be back very shortly with another Jay's Play Show. Going to leave you in the capable hands of DJ Q. Thank you so much. I am Jay Plum of Sidewalk. You're listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play Show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play Show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.